Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. This podcast is, of course, brought to you by the Shangri-La Hotel Shanghai. Today I'm in Qatar, a country which is in the newspapers on a daily basis at the moment, and Nikki is in Hamburg, Germany. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
Well, I'm fine, but no one really cares. We all want to know about you and how you're going.
So once again, because we always have this time factor of, you know, someone's going to listen to this in 3 years' time and go, what are they talking about? Okay, so how am I? Well, for anyone that hasn't listened to the news, Qatar's going through a little bit of a...
A diplomatic spat?
Yeah. Yes, maybe that. So the world was travelling along normally, as normal as it can be when you're waiting to see if your husband's going to lose his job, which is supposedly we're going to get told any time in the next sort of couple of months. But the world was travelling along normally, waiting to sort of hear about that, children wrapping up at school because, of course, it is the summer holidays a week away for us. And I woke up on the Monday morning, read the newspaper that Saudi Arabia had decided they were going to close their borders to Qatar and that several other countries were considering doing the same thing. That was the first sort of news report that I heard, and received a text from my husband saying, go to the bank and get some money and then go to the supermarket and get some food because, you know, things could be a bit tight. And within that time, I sort of got in the car, went and did those things. I had a conference call for work, so I did that out in the car, and it was within that next hour that I started to see while I was on that conference call, people going in with their trolleys and just coming out with trolleys like full of chickens and milk and eggs, because they are the three main things that I think people in Qatar think about when they think of Saudi, is chickens, milk and eggs, because it's all sort of the same company. Yeah, so that was nearly a week ago. I guess it'll be a week tomorrow. So within this last week, that has definitely been the case. We have several countries now that have said you can't fly to us, and if you hold a Qatari residence visa, you can no longer visit us, and the borders are closed, and things are changing on a daily basis.
And the Maldives. I mean, I'd be very upset about that, in case you
have. Yeah, and I've never been to the Maldives, but I also, if I was to be realistic, I probably wasn't going to get there in the next few months.
But I did think, gee, I bet some people that live in Qatar have a holiday planned in the Maldives this summer. That's one of the things, the thoughts that did cross my mind. And the other thing was brought to my attention by Beck Graham, who we're going to hear a bit later in an interview, was that Kirsty might not be able to go to Dubai for the Big Fat Expat Meetup in October.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't. And that's the weird thing because, you know, one page of my passport is a very shiny Qatari residence visa. And all of a sudden, that page in your passport suddenly sticks out like the proverbial dog's you know what, because... You're now a marked person of whether you can get in or out. And I gather if I'm to try and go to any of those places, I would get turned around and told no.
It's so bizarre. And then you put a post on Facebook. So this episode was going to be about something totally different. It was going to be about nice and fuzzy and warm and lovely holiday destinations. And then you put a post on the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page where you talked about one of your favourite things, football podcasts.
Yes, real or overreaction. So my favourite, and it's not a podcast, it's a television show.
Oh, sorry.
And yes, I watch it daily, but I won't be watching it this week because my team got absolutely thrashed yesterday and I can't bear to talk about it. But my favourite show is a show called AFL 360, and they have a section called Real or Overreaction. And I'd said in the post that it kind of goes like this. One guy will say to the other guy, you know, the Pies beating North Melbourne on the weekend by 15 goals means that they're surely going to be in the eight. Real or overreaction? And the other guy will say overreaction. You know, like that it's only one game, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, the coach should get the sack, you know, real or overreaction. You know, that's real because, you know, he's had a terrible year, whatever. So I was thinking about the whole, I you know, when my husband and I have lived in some trickier countries where there have been some political dramas, and we moved to Jakarta very soon after the riots there, and there were still certain places that we weren't allowed to travel to, and you know, all of the friends that I made had been there during the riots, so they were able to describe those evacuating procedures and what happens. And we lived in Libya, and you know, we've been through different things, whether it's not even political, maybe it's a SARS outbreak or something like that, and we've always stay very calm. In fact, my husband kind of prides himself on that the company he used to work for were always the last to leave. He thinks that's a good thing. So, you know, I was travelling on thinking, oh, well, as long as we've got food and water, we're fine, because I kind of think, well, if something was to happen and, you know, we were suddenly visited by soldiers, that we would probably, the real truth of it would be you would be locked inside, you know, for a couple of weeks until things sorted themselves out. I don't see us being in danger. Do you know, I just see it would be something political would happen. But I started to hear everybody else's reactions, right? You know, people were sending, because of course you start to get all these messages from home, and sometimes people, you know, I got a message from a friend I haven't spoken to in about 4 years. Hey, are you okay? I'm thinking, I had breast cancer. I didn't even
and nothing. Nothing.
I don't want any of my friends to think that I was noting who contacted me during that time. But
but that's the thing. So I woke up, I saw it, I quickly went to my map because my world geography isn't that great, and I was like, oh, Saudi Arabia. No, I know where Qatar is, I know where the Middle East is.
Yeah. No, but I'm the same. I'm giggling because I'm the same, and it has made me this is a thing that makes you realise how you really need to know your geography.
And I pride myself on understanding geography and knowing where things are, but I'm like, no, I need to know the specifics.
Yes.
So then I had a look, and I'm like, well, Saudi Arabia is the only land contact, so closing the borders is quite significant because it's the only way to drive in and out. Yes.
Yes, yes.
And then I sort of contacted you and said, everything okay? And you're like, yeah, it's fine. And then my husband, Sam, kept saying to me, what about this? What about that? And what is this? What is that? I was like, I don't think I can message her every time you want me to ask something. Well, and then I had people messaging me, like my friends messaging me saying, oh, I hope Kirsty's okay.
Yes, and it is like that. You know, you can imagine my mother's beside herself. You know, I think parents get to a certain stage where they're like, okay, I can be as cool as you want, but there's going to be a stage where I'm just going to say, no, I think you should get on a plane and come home. And the thing is, we do have tickets booked to fly out of here next week. We have our normal school holiday tickets booked. So we're all kind of just keeping our eye on that date that will be. And I'm also wondering whether by next week I'll know whether my husband has a job as well. So there's that on top of it of, you know, we have to keep that in mind. But also we don't know whether this political situation makes the merger take longer. Everything get stopped? And the other thing that's really surprised me is it's Ramadan. And, you know, Ramadan is such a beautiful time in the Muslim world. Like, it's a real time of peace, bizarrely, and caring. And it's just beautiful. Do you know, last night we were sitting outside, we had a friend over for a barbecue, and it's quite noisy out the back of our house now because they built a road.
Because of the road.
In our backyard. But there was this period of time because, you know, you hear the call to prayer, you know, just as the sunset's coming, and suddenly just everything is, you could hear a pin drop. It's so quiet because you know that everybody has made it home to break the fast with their families and their friends. And it's just the most beautiful feeling because you suddenly go, well, everybody's stopped everything to be with others, to break the fast together in this way. You know, there's not a car on the road. There's not any action because everybody's doing this one thing at one time. And it's quite magical. And it really took me back to Libya, because I remember the same things happening in Libya, that, you know, suddenly the roads would be clear and you couldn't hear a thing and it would just be families together. So it has surprised me that this is happening now.
Yes. And of course, on top of, you know, the political situation, the husband situation and the job situation, there's the house situation.
Yes. Yes. So we always kept a house in Australia in case something like this happened. And we sold it 2 weeks ago, so which is just so funny. So we're building a house, and of course when you're building a house you need to sell the house that you currently have so you can pay to build your house, pay for the house you're building. And yeah, so I went home a few weeks ago and packed up the house. It settled on June 2nd. It was sold. But we've always had this house to say, well, if anything ever happened, you know, not that it ever would, but if anything ever happened, well, we would have this house to go to. And, of course, now we are homeless.
So your post, though, about a real or overreaction generated a great response, which is why we decided to show you the episode on it this week.
Yeah, there were some crackers, weren't there, Nikki? I think the first one was Amy Lynn.
Yeah, so Amy Lynn moved to Istanbul last summer to start a new contract 4 days after the attempted coup. And in the middle of a long chain of attacks in the country. So if one thing being an expat has taught her is that there's always more than one side to any story. And this is a great one. Sometimes the grass is always greener, but sometimes it's also fake turf. So we expats have to roll with a lot of crazy stuff. Cheers to you, Amy. That's a great,
It was, because Amy had talked about she'd moved from Shanghai with a with a child that was really affected by the smog and pollution. But that whole thing about the grass being greener, it is, because we always miss the last place that we were at. And we can always see the beauty of the last place we were at once we're not there anymore.
That's right.
Okay, Martina Brown said they had to leave Bahrain in a hurry as well. The British Embassy advised all women and children to be out of the country that very evening. Flights were booked within 10 minutes, then a four-hour journey to the airport, normally takes about half an hour, then a six-hour wait at the airport. They had to get to the airport before 6 p.m. curfew on all the streets. I wonder if that all happened here. We left our belongings, our pets, our beloved housekeeper. Couldn't get a visa to take her with us. Cried all the way home. Guess what? We were back in Bahrain within a week. It was a total overreaction. She says now she's more laid back and she's discovered a million and one dishes you can make with a tin of tuna and baked beans.
Perhaps you should get some tuna and baked beans and DM Martina and ask her for some recipes.
But I loved her point of it being an overreaction, because, you know, even in Jakarta when they had the riots, that's exactly what happened. Everybody did this drastic, you know, terrifying run to the airport where there were fires all over the city. And, you know, my beautiful friend Belinda at the time said, you know, she was a tough stick. I remember her saying she cried all the way to the airport because she was leaving her husband behind, and, you know, there was military everywhere and things burning, and, you know, the city had just kind of exploded. And, yeah, back within a week, it was all over and done with. So I think that's something we need to remember. And also, you have to say, Nikki, at this point in time, you know, we sound so precious talking about this stuff when you think about people who are currently living in Syria and Iraq and what they go through on a daily basis. So perspective, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. So Shirley Neumann replied to, it was quite a chain of commentary, but she said she was remembering one night when there were explosions in Lagos and the company, thinking it might be a coup, advised us to get ready to evacuate. Everybody on the compound had to gather in one flat, which happened to be theirs, and only take essentials. And as hubby poured out the beers and wine, somebody asked me what I had packed in my little shoulder bag. It turned out to be passports, sunglasses, a lipstick and two tampons. So Shirley was prepared. And I think I read in another part of the thread that she was actually in a bikini and a sarong at the time when she was... hosting all the people. And it turned out it wasn't a coup, but it was an explosion and a lot of people lost their lives, sadly. But she said, yeah, it was a bad situation, but it didn't turn out to be what they thought.
I think that comment says so much about me, because when I first read, because she wrote when hubby poured out the beers and wine, my first thought was, oh, my God, they had to pour out all their beer and wine. They lost all their alcohol.
Oh, no, I thought they were giving it to their guests.
Yes. I realise now that that meant he was pouring drinks for everybody. But my first fear was they lost their alcohol. Oh, my gosh, that's terrible. Okay, Louise Edwards said, I left Libya in a hurry, passports and one suitcase and husband, thinking we'd be a few weeks to a month. Never happened. I don't go as far as keeping an emergency evacuation bag here in the UAE, but I would be very much more careful and selective about what I did take with me in the situation, if the situation ever arose again. You know, that Libya one, because we obviously lived in Libya and things were fine, but Louise is, I imagine, talking about after the Arab Spring. And yeah, I have a very good friend who was the safety guy in Libya when all of that happened for a very big company. And he walked us through exactly what that looked like. And with the company that we used to work for, they all ended up dossing down in one house. So everybody went to this house and they put mattresses all over the floor. So it was all the families of this company. So I'd say about 20 families all in this house. And, you know, he gathered everybody's passports, and the company, which was a huge international expat company, then arranged for a plane to land in the desert and everybody to get on the plane and go.
Oh, God.
I know. And it was terrifying, because when people evacuated from Libya, there were just, you know, people trying to get on all sorts of ships to get out and, you know, get out of the airport. And it was dangerous and it was scary. But I can still remember our friend saying how he was pushing this woman onto the plane, because I can't remember whether they were being flown to Malta or whether they were actually being flown further afoot. But in her moment of, you know, catastrophe and getting on, she turned and said, "But which hotel will we be staying at?"
She was very focused.
And he was thinking, for God's sake, woman, you need to get on this plane and get out of here. Who cares which hotel? But yeah.
And were they getting on a plane that was commandeered by them because they were the last people out? There was no more planes left?
I would say that might be it, but I do not know. But I would say that, knowing the company, yes, they would have been one of the last to leave.
So Carol Walker, who I tried to get an interview, but we just missed each other time-wise. So she says she's been evacuated twice, and on both occasions watched others leaving, thinking we'd just sit tight and see things out. And then it's amazing how quickly your attitude can change, I imagine, when she had to actually leave. No one can tell you the right thing to do. Just go with your gut. I think one of those times was from Cameroon, and I'm not sure what the other time was.
Yeah, because I think that's a really good point. You're probably all fine when you're all still there, but as your friends start to disappear around you and you're the last one left standing, you'd have to be made of really strong stuff to
We're fine.
Yeah, not have a bit of self-doubt. Danielle said her mum and dad were expats, and the last posting was to Fiji during the coup. Her mum called to let her know that they were okay. She could hardly hear her over the gunfire in the background. She said, bless her motherliness. And that raises a really good point about kids, right? Because my children, I have two scenarios with my kids at the moment. Is I have one child in Australia who's watching all of this and is getting quite nervy about it. She's with her auntie Susie this weekend in Sydney, but she wanted to talk about it yesterday, and she was frustrated that there wasn't enough news in her news feed about it, but also wanted to know, well, when are you coming home? Because you can imagine, for a 17-year-old, the idea of your entire family being somewhere where you're not and reading stuff. So there's that. And then the flip side of that is I have My other three here, who are all very much into politics and world affairs, like number two and number three are, you know, number three is into MUN and, you know, doing all the United Nations stuff and loves to have these conversations. So they're talking about it. There's a lot of conversation about why it's happening and what could happen and why that would happen. And so it's very different from back when we had toddlers who you could just gloss over everything and how exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is so exciting. And, you know, let's all camp in the one room together. It'd be just fantastic, you know. But you can't do that with your 12 and 14-year-old who are very well aware of it. The answer I would give to anyone at the moment about what's going on with our family is my three that are here really don't seem to be concerned at all. And I think because they're all talking with their friends and, you know.
And their friends are all still here. Like, no one's bailing, right?
Yeah, the only people that have had to leave out of their friend group is, in my daughter's year, the son of the Saudi ambassador had to leave.
Because he was asked to leave the country?
Well, he would have been recalled back. And this is where these diplomatic things get interesting, right? Because I think people would think he would be asked to leave, but that's not how it works. It would be his country would have recalled him back, saying, well, we're not talking to them anymore.
So based on what people hear overseas versus what they hear in country is something that I talked about when I spoke with Beck. Beck Graham's an Australian who lives in Abu Dhabi right now, but she was in Bangkok she had just moved to Bangkok when the coup happened. So here's our interview with her.
So Bangkok was our first expat posting and so we arrived, I think, in April 2014, and it had been in the midst of all the protesting, you know, that we had heard a bit on the news about the protests that had been going on for some months. And we landed in Bangkok, and we were staying in temporary accommodation right in the middle of Sukhumvit, right in the middle of downtown Bangkok, where a lot of the protests were centred around. So we arrived, and it was a bit overwhelming on occasion because we would go for a walk and realise that actually there was a big protest coming and that we needed to actually get out of the way. I remember we were sitting having a coffee in Starbucks of all places, and this really busy street, all of a sudden there were no cars, and about a minute later there were just tens of thousands of people marching past and really not understanding what they were protesting about, other than that there were the yellow shirts and the red shirts, and that I should be really careful about what colour shirt I wore going out. And so we'd been there for about 2 weeks, and then there was this coup, and I really didn't know at all what it meant, except that there was all of a sudden a curfew imposed, there was a military government in charge, school was cancelled, and this area that we were living in this hotel that was so busy and so noisy was all of a sudden like a ghost town. There were no cars anywhere, and it just had this really eerie, quiet feeling about it. But I don't think even then I really understood what it meant to be involved in a coup. And I remember getting this text from one of the very few people we knew in Bangkok saying, "Just want to let you know there's been a coup. Don't be alarmed." And I remember saying to my husband, "I don't think I was alarmed. Should I be alarmed? I'm not sure," you know. And so I think perhaps a dose of naivety and not really understanding what was going on meant that it was more bewildering than frightening, or I didn't ever felt like I should do anything about it.
So were you there with children?
Yeah. So 10 and 7, I think my kids were at the time. And because I think from memory it was on a Friday, so school buses were cancelled, school was cancelled. Dan worked a block away, so he just walked to work. And I remember just feeling like it was all okay because my kids were with me. We were in this hotel. My husband was at work. Everything was going to be fine. You know, it didn't have that sense of I needed to have everybody with me because they were all there anyway. So not knowing what to do, the kids and I spent the day by the pool, like under reaction to what was such a serious situation for the local Thais.
Do you think just arriving there helped your underreaction? Do you think if you'd been there already for 2 years that you would have felt differently or acted differently? Obviously, you wouldn't have been staying in a hotel, but
yeah, well, that would have been one of the down points. But I think it probably would have given me more clarity. I think what was the most reassuring was talking to local Thais who basically said, well, this is how we do it. We've had 8 coups in the last 10 years and it's going to be okay. It's nothing to be worried about. And for very much for the local Thais, it was kind of business as usual. It was, yep, another coup. That'll settle everything down. It'll all be okay. So I think perhaps if we had been there for longer, I would have had a greater appreciation of the way Thais do politics and the way that they cope with the coup and things, because certainly it felt, for me, felt more serious than perhaps the local Thais, if that makes any sense.
And what about your family and friends overseas? Were they, you just moved there?
Absolutely. And so we had lots of messages, you know, even before we went with the protesting. I think my mum had asked if it was really a great time to go. And I said, of course it is. What could possibly go wrong? And so I think that certainly from our parents back in Australia and from friends, there was a lot of, you know, are you okay? What's going on? One of the interesting things was one of the first things they did was shut down all the local TV. But because we were in a hotel, I don't quite know how it works, but I think we had a satellite feed. So we were still able to watch BBC and Sky and CNN. So we were actually able to watch the international coverage, but not any local coverage. So in some ways, we were a little bit more fortunate because we actually were still able to access news, whereas a lot of people who were in the private homes had no access to that. One of the interesting things, which looking back was quite funny, was the Thais really took this in their stride and that, you know, it was going to be okay. And then I think about 2 days into the coup, Facebook went down for an hour and a half and there was outrage. You know, it was almost like, sure, you can oust our democratically elected government, but don't take out Facebook. That's just crossing the line. So there was almost more angst and anxiety about the fact that people couldn't, you know, access social media than actually accessing news and things like that.
You said that when the coup, you got the overseas coverage. Did you find the overseas coverage was actually different or presented a different angle than what you were feeling was happening locally?
I think it was. I think there was, in hindsight, perhaps a failure to appreciate the Thai way of politics and the Thai way of culture. And I think that the international news certainly was reporting the coup from a very Western point of view of that, you know, this was a terrible thing to happen, that the coup was, you know, the worst blow to democracy. Whereas I think actually the Thai people had been through so many coups that actually they were okay with it, and they were, in one sense, perhaps relieved that the protesting had stopped and that there was finally someone who was taking charge and showing quite strong leadership. So I think that very much the international coverage was showing an international view of Thai politics as opposed to a Thai view of politics.
And what about this week? What are you seeing locally about what's happening in the region?
So for personally, it hasn't really impacted us too much, except for the fact that I can't now go to Doha, which perhaps I thought I might like to do at some point, being in the region. It's, I think, affected some friends quite significantly initially because they had flights booked through Doha and with Qatar, and, you know, it's coming up to summertime and every man and his dog is leaving, so there was great anxiety about how am I going to get home or how am I going to go on this trip of a lifetime that we've been planning for a year. But, you know, to their credit, Qatar Airways have sorted that out and got them separate flights. And again, we're relatively new here, so I've actually found it really fascinating just to read all these articles that talk about historically what's all this happened, you know, to just get a sense of the history of this region and things. And, you know, I think we do, and you guys have talked about it a lot, but we do kind of live in a bit of a bubble. We don't, how often do we really get involved in the history of the place that we're in? How often do we take an interest in the politics and an understanding of the politics and things? So it's been really interesting just to read all of that and get a better understanding of the region, I guess. I do know one very serious in our house consequence of the Qatari thing is that our TV, a lot of our TV channels come out of Qatar, and including the English Premier League. And so my husband is quite concerned as all those channels have been turned off. Luckily, the season has just finished. But there's great concern about how people are going to watch football.
Oh, goodness.
Qatari stations are banned. Gosh, if only you had another way of watching it, like the internet.
That was fantastic. I love Beck. I want to be friends with Beck. I want to hang out with her.
I know, right?
She sounds amazing. I love the red shirts, yellow shirts. Suddenly realised I had to be careful what colour shirt I was going to wear.
Luckily, I don't have a lot of red shirts or yellow shirts in my wardrobe.
And it's funny, you know, I'd forgotten about Sukhumvit Road. And I love it when people talk about another city that you've been in and spent some time in, and you suddenly remember, you know, things pop into your head about other countries. Yeah. But I thought she was so, it was so true when she said it probably didn't worry her too much because she had everyone with her. And I think, I totally agree. I think if you've got all your children with you and your husband's still around and whatever, it's not half as scary as something going wrong with different people in different places. It hadn't occurred to me until the other day I went to my son's, they call it a step up, which is when you move from elementary school into middle school. And they mentioned that they had a particular authority at the school just doing a few checks. And I suddenly thought, oh yeah, I guess the school would be being probably a little bit careful right now. So I was thinking, oh, I'll be glad when that bit's over. Do you know when I've got, because it's really only 3 more days left of school, and I will be very glad when that's over and the kids are home with me. So we're not thinking about that. But back to Beck, just how funny was the when the Facebook went down for an hour. And
don't take Facebook.
You can take our, your right to vote, but you can't take our Facebook. I thought she was fantastic, and obviously she is not an overreaction person. She's real.
Yeah. Yeah, very real. That's right. To go on to the other responses we have on the page, because we had so many and so many good ones. So Jennifer Stokes said, we're due to fly home from Qatar for summer on the 23rd of June, originally with Emirates, but we've now bought Qatar Airways tickets. Unlike past years, this summer we'll be taking all our documents, all my jewellery and all the kids' favourite toys. We plan on coming back by the end of August, but you can never be too sure. Also, I have an underlying feeling of anxiety while hubby is more laid back. Mind you, he was raised in Belfast during the Troubles, so he is well prepared. So that's interesting. But also then, Kirsty, that begs the question, how many suitcases are you taking when you go back?
Well, of course, we did have this conversation of we should all make the most of our allowance and take back as much as we can. But, of course, we have no house.
To your house, to your, yeah.
And
I have to drive to Granny's house.
Yes. And then it's like, well, how do you fit all the suitcases in the car with all the kids to Granny's? Because you can't. So I guess we would have to, and I have...
Hire two cars.
No. We would put the suitcases on a bus to Granny's. That's what we would do.
Oh,
so I guess we would come home, go to, because, you know, the first couple of nights are in a hotel, we would basically, yeah, do that, go and put all those things on a bus to go to Granny's and then sort it out from there. And I'm sure Granny would be absolutely delighted at me, because she would like to sell her house at some stage, so I'm sure she'll be very happy that I'm about to dump, you know, 10 bags of stuff at her house. But yeah, that is the common conversation in Qatar at the moment. I was at a leaving party on the weekend, and there was a lot of, I guess, real or overreaction conversation of people who were saying, I don't know if I'm going to come back after the summer. And I think they were just concerned about, well, what if this goes on, or how it goes on. Or, and then a lot of people, other people, saying, well, of course you're going to come back, and of course it's going to be the same, and, you know, there's nothing to worry about. So I don't know, because, you know, everybody's had a different conversation, everybody has a different point of view. The only thing that everybody seems to be on the same page with is that nobody knows anything. Anyway, back to Melissa O'Connell said her husband convinced her to stay during a swine flu attack. That would be my husband. And ended up with one child in quarantine hospital with swine flu, no visitors allowed, and the remaining family members under government quarantine orders for 10 days not to leave the house. We weren't even allowed out to shop. I had to leave a note on the gate for the butcher to leave the meat on the front gate. After, oh gosh. I know, after the first day of five of us, a baby, a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old shut in the house together, we were taking bets on who would survive the whole 10 days. He, as in her husband, has been told that the slightest hint of any flu and they're on the first plane out.
From now on, yes, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, Melissa really did suffer with that one. That's tough. Imagine having your child in hospital and you couldn't visit them.
No.
Oh, terrible. No,
awful.
Sarah Schmidt lives in Manila and she said there's so many scare stories that can scare the pants off you if you want to listen, because fear-mongering's big business there. She said, be it gangs, the child abductions, the threat of earthquakes, and now the threat of terror. She doesn't have a bag packed, much to the ire of her mother. She knows where the important stuff is and is laid back because her attitude is quite simple. For where we live, be sensible. She doesn't go to the places where the gangs are and the kids get snatched unless she has to, and she has very strict rules about behaviour if she needs to take her kid. She says she doesn't expose herself to unnecessary risks where possible, believes most people are inherently good, and locals love to see a white redhead driving through their town. And when she throws in some Tagalog, they're very happy to help her. She said, though, she keeps an oversupply of water, tinned foods in the house, a few torches, etc. So if they were going to be stuck, they'd be okay. She says she has friends at the opposite end of the spectrum to full-blown plans in place. And when she hears them, she wonders if she's the stupid one. But she says she learned many years ago not to focus on that which I don't control or know about. Place your energy where it matters. My kids, my current day, what's for dinner, and why is the dog eating out of the bin? The world is crazy at the moment, so keeping my little patch worry-free and fun for my kids is my focus. Stay safe, everyone. Words of wisdom there from Sarah.
Huge words of wisdom. I just had a flashback about, you know, she said she's got those friends that have got those huge plans in place. I remember going to a wedding, and it would have had to have been 10 years ago in Sydney, where a couple who lived in Sydney told me that they had their terrorist plans in place. They had no kids. They're both single. Just thinking about the what that went on to look like as they went on to have children and mortgages and things. But they had a whole plan in place of where they would meet and what they would do and how to get out. You know, and I guess it's amazing, isn't it, that some of us walk through the world with these thoughts and others have no thoughts.
Well, there's a huge industry in the US, preppers. They're called preppers, wow. Preparation people. There's a whole chain of stores, you know, prep stores where you can go and get all the basic survival stuff, all sorts of stuff that you can do. It's quite amazing. I went in one once and I walked out because I thought, I'm not ready for this. I'm just going to go to my neighbour's house.
Gosh, that's incredible. I wonder if that even exists in Australia.
I think it's probably not nearly on the same scale. There's a lot of firearms involved in it, obviously, but in the US. But there's also a lot of other stuff, you know, water filters and all sorts of things. Because, you know, if you lose your electricity, you lose your water, you know, there's all sorts of things that you don't really think about. You're like, oh, we'll be fine. We had a snowstorm and they tell you, or in case everything ices up, fill your baths with water. And, you know, if you need fresh water for a few days, so we fill our baths with water. I was like, that wouldn't really last, you know, in the apocalypse.
Oh, dear. And I don't think I've ever had a bath plug in any house I've lived that hasn't let the water run out within a few hours. Okay, so Dahlia said it's always good to have an evacuation plan. She said in Fiji, they lived there in between two coups, and the most recent one happened a few months after they left, but it was sort of simmering away for a while before they were gone. They were in Tokyo for only 3 months when the big earthquake and tsunami hit and were totally unprepared. They were meant to be flying out for spring break that afternoon but only managed to get out on the Sunday night. They were totally underreacting and couldn't understand why our local burger place was closed and we had to go to KFC for dinner as we had no food in the house due to their impending holiday. She said, then the nuclear reactor blew up on the Saturday night. Things changed. They seriously considered driving straight to the airport to get out on the next flight to anywhere with small kids, or wait till Sunday evening when there was the Qantas flight to Sydney. She also says there was a time her husband had threats against him from the Ukrainian mafia and a baboon problem in Cape Town, which made them pack up and move house less than a year after moving there. Overreaction? Question mark. The expat life is full of these little situations. She says, good luck for you in the next weeks before your summer holiday. I think that was directed to me, which was very kind, but how funny is that? I mean, and also so many different places she's lived where there's been...
Yes, a baboon. I might be out of there in a minute. I mean, I had a monkey problem in South Africa, but not a baboon problem. I would not have hung around for the baboons, that's for sure.
Why are the baboons worse? Are they nastier?
They're bigger, yeah, right. and nastier, and they can do things much more. So we went, my brother, my mum and I went on a holiday from Durban to Cape Town, to the Cape of Good Hope, which is the southernmost point of Africa. And you park the car and then you walk up, you know, you walk along the track and then you come back and then the baboons are usually there in the car park. Well, some poor sucker had their car unlocked, the baboon just opens the door, gets in and just starts going through all the things in the car. Like they are really seriously, because they're people sized, you know, they're not like little like monkeys, which you can sort of, yeah, you know, make yourself bigger. And but baboons, they're not big on listening.
No.
Okay, so Denise Ross says, we always have a bag of documents packed in a grab bag. If we needed to leave for any reason, passports, some money and certificates, which I guess is birth certificates, marriage certificates, etc. The rest is replaceable. We left Doha 6 months ago for New Zealand, which has many natural threats, which I think is a reference to earthquakes and not necessarily snakes and spiders. I think it's good to be prepared and have a contingency plan. However, no need to run at the first sign of trouble.
Absolutely. Now, Clara Wiggins, who has that many stories under her belt, I think she could keep us entertained for hours, because she was, of course, an expat child and then an expat as an adult. But she said it's always best to have a plan. They had to evacuate Islamabad in 2008 after the Marriott Hotel was bombed. She said, but we had time to get ready. It took 2 weeks to decide to send us home. However, it was very hard during that time, not knowing what was going to happen to us. I will add, it was easier for us as we weren't given a choice. And that's such a good point. Much harder when you have to decide for yourself. And, you know, my husband and I are not good at mobilising ourselves. We're very good at other people telling us what to do. Hence, you know, when we worked for one company that moved us continuously 7 times in 11 years or something, yeah, we were fine, up and gone and up and gone. We're now working for a company that really would be our decision if we were going to go. We haven't gone anywhere. I said to him the other day, you know, is that it? Do people just need to kick us out before us to go? I don't know, but, yeah, it is much harder when you're making the decision yourself.
Yeah, so Susan Fong moved to London at the end of June 2005, just 2 weeks before 7/7, which I guess was the London
bombing.
Bombings, yeah. And moved to Syria in January 2011, moved to Kazakhstan in November 2011, just before an uprising that was quickly suppressed, and just recently returned to London, which, of course, has also had problems recently, sadly. I've learned after 12 years overseas, that's not to mention the fact we were supposed to move to Libya before Syria, you can never predict your future. I've had more car accidents in that time, all minor, thankfully, than any experiences with terrorism or uprising. I always register with the embassies where Canadian, British dual nationals, and live my day-to-day life. Kids do make the decisions a bit more difficult. We've had lots of conversations in the last few weeks regarding the situations in London and Manchester as kids at school are talking. But my mentality is something bad can happen anywhere. Everything important is backed up, documents, photos, etc., and we know what we need to grab in a pinch. Me, the kids, the husband, the hard drive. Being through it in Syria where I had one day to pack up anything valuable and leave, so much better than our friends in Libya that left with nothing. And you realise pretty quickly how fortunate you are to have the option to leave and the support network to help you get out, which is very, very true.
Yes, yes. Okay, so our last one that we'll talk about. Emily had an emergency backpack in Seoul when North Korea was going through a particularly crazy period. Even the locals were raising an eyebrow. She said, husband definitely thought it was an overreaction, but it made me feel like I was doing something. And that's a great point to discuss, isn't it, Nikki? Is that,
yes.
But yeah, maybe if you are feeling a little bit out of control, start to do those little things that can give you back a little feeling of control. Maybe do pack a bag. So what were you going to say, Nikki, was the overall answer that you
gave? I was going to say, yeah, from just reading all this and from talking to Beck, the overall answer probably seems to be, from all this amazing hundreds of years of feedback that we got in quite a short time period, be aware, be sensible, be safe, be prepared, but you can't always control everything.
Yeah.
So,
and that made me think of a conversation I had only a couple of weeks ago in Adelaide. So I was talking to an Australian woman who is an expat in Singapore at the moment, lovely Kelly. I actually don't know if she listens to the podcast. We didn't talk about the podcast or the blog. I don't even know if she knows that I write a podcast or that I write a blog or do a podcast. But one of the things, we didn't sort of go down that track in our conversation, but one of the things she was talking about, because they have moved around a hell of a lot and they've been through a lot of mergers and, you know, a lot of situations, you know, that sort of change very quickly and rapidly. And I was asking her how she sort of handled things, and this whole philosophy comes in a chapter of Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People?
I think it is. Yeah.
Now, I haven't read Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Effective People, but I am totally into this whole thought of your circle of control and circle of influence. And I think, Nikki, that we should do an entire podcast on this for expats, because I think, particularly with expat women, sometimes if it's you that's sort of stopped to have a child, you know, for those couple of years, and maybe you're not working and you're following someone else's career or whatever, you can feel very much like you don't have any control over anything. And, you know, while I have got myself a job and organised my children's lives and, you know, I'm building a house and doing all of those things, I have no control over what's happening with my husband's job, and also no idea or sense of what's going on behind the scenes with that, which means you have those terrible conversations where you're asking, you know, well, what do you think would happen? And what did he say when you said that? And when did they say they were going to let you know this? And it's just, you would know, Nikki, you've done it yourself.
Yes, I'm there now.
Yeah. And you're trying not to sound like a naggy, you know, spouse in, you know, you're not telling me what's going on or whatever, but because you know that they're in a bad situation, but you also think, bugger, I wish I could have been at that meeting and heard, you know, what was said, because I'm so much better at picking up the cues. Yes, I would have got so much better information and I would know. Which, of course, as I'm saying this, makes you an even more infuriating person, because you know that your husband knows that you think that.
That's right. My husband sent me an email about his company's also going through a merger and there's transition situations or whatever, and he said, you know, read this. And so I read, and I said, so why are you head of this initiative but on this other committee? He said, what? I don't know what you're talking about. I think you should reread the email.
Yeah, because all that stuff comes into play, because there'll be certain people who are chosen to discuss, you know, what goes on. But then, you know in the past that even when people have been on those committees, they've then disappeared as well. So it means nothing. Do you know? Yeah. And then you think, well, what the lovely Kelly was saying to me is that she has become very good at not worrying about the things that she cannot control, that she focuses on what she can, and all that other stuff, she just lets that go because she can't do anything about it. And I think that's really worth a podcast episode, because I think that's something we all need to do in our expat lives is, you know, I can't, I have no control over what's going to happen here politically, but I can focus on making sure that I have a bag ready to roll. And Nikki, you were going to talk about that too, about that sort of information.
Yes, I was going to say that's one thing that we're doing for the launch of Fat Expats, which is a new subscription-based newsletter that will be coming out very, very shortly. And one of the things we've talked about is if you have to leave in a hurry, what do you need to have together? So
yeah, and if anyone is interested in subscribing to Fat Expats, you know that you can go to Kirsty Rice Online or the Two Fat Expats website, and there's a little pop-up that comes up and says, hey, there's a fantastic newsletter coming out, you should subscribe. So yes, please do. So yeah,
so close.
But that is one of the things, is start to control the things you can. So, you know, you have the conversations with your children, you pack the bag, you have your tickets ready, you sort of know, but then just try and forget about the things that you can't control and move on with your day to day. Because I have to say, 18 years of expat life, of all the times I've worried about things that I shouldn't have, it's just wasted time. And here I am, 18 years later, I'm still here. I'm still doing it. We're still surviving. Okay, so, Nikki, tell me about podcasts that you've listened to.
So podcasts I've really gotten into recently, The Guilty Feminist, which I'm sure, have you listened to The Guilty Feminist?
No. I have not listened to any new. I have a list of podcasts that I want to get started on, but I haven't listened to any because my entire world is filled up with football podcasts at the moment. But this week will be a good week for me to discover others because I'm not listening to any football podcasts because I don't want anyone to tell me how terrible my team was. I saw it. I don't need to relive it. Okay, tell me about the Guilty Feminist.
So, Guilty Feminist podcast is by an English comedian called Deborah Frances White, and she has a series of special guests. And initially she did start it with another lady as well because I've gone back and listened to some of the back catalogue. And they discuss topics all 21st century feminists agree on while confessing their insecurities, hypocrisies and fears that underlie their lofty principles. And so every show opens with, I'm a feminist, but... So some of the ones I heard were funny. I'm a feminist, but part of me believes that if I spent time with the famous fictitious misogynist Don Draper, I could make him whole and heal his pain.
Me too.
I'm a feminist, but sometimes when I'm talking to another feminist about a topic I may not know a lot about, I agree with her opinions because I want her to like me.
Oh.
And, you know, just this, it's just funny things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're so clever for starters, and it's very funny. But they also talk about really important and relevant things. And there was a recent episode called Being an Inspiration, which reminded me of the conversation we had on a podcast not so long ago about the amazing Carly Finlay and her work as an appearance activist.
Yes.
And when she was on the show, you can't ask that. So they had someone on there who has Tourette's and is a comedian. And so they talked about the difference between disabilities and, you know, disability porn and all that kind of stuff. So it was just really interesting and practical. And they talked about things like, you know, when you have a march for people with disabilities, you know, is there actually going to be disabled access there? Because sometimes there isn't. You know, all these things that people have these great lofty ideas and set off in the direction wanting to do the right thing, but in fact haven't necessarily involved all the right people, and so all the right people can't participate. So that was a really good episode that I listened to recently, but I have enjoyed every single one that I've listened to. It just really makes you think a lot.
Yeah. Just on Carly Finlay, she has a podcast called Refreshments Provided, but yeah, she was amazing and you can't ask that. And I saw that she'd hooked up with one of the other people on You Can't Ask That the other day, and it looks like they're doing a bit of public speaking as well. So I hope that continues, because I think Carly has educated us all on where we think we might be doing great things where we're actually being really condescending. I haven't listened to any new podcasts this week, as I said, because I just listened to football podcasts. And if anyone's wondering what those football podcasts are, I am addicted, absolutely addicted to Gary, Tim and Hamish, who are Gary Lyon, Tim Watson and Hamish McLaughlin, who are on the radio every morning in Melbourne. But of course, that then gets condensed into a podcast and shot out once they've finished it. And it's perfect timing for me, because by the time I get up in the morning, I can put them on and, you know, feel like I'm listening to morning radio in Melbourne, but listening to them. I find them hysterically funny, and I am sure I'm not meant to be their target audience. because when people ring in, it's always 10 men that ring in with their things. But they had this segment the other day, Nikki, and it really made me think, because it's a question my husband asked me 19 years ago when I met him, and it's always been a question we've kind of said along the way of what is a man's man? Have you heard that expression when someone describes someone as, you know, he's a real man's man?
Yes.
Yes. And so during the week, a footballer who actually plays for the Port Adelaide Football Club, just thought I'd put that in there.
Oh, what a surprise.
But this just happened as a side thing, because these guys are in Melbourne and none of them are associated with my football club, right? I listen to them solely because they talk about all things, sort of football and sport, but also some sort of funny banter in there as well. During the week, someone from my football team, a guy called Jackson Trengrove, had described another guy on the team, Charlie Dixon, as being a bloke's bloke. And he said, you know, he's a bloke's bloke. He's a man's man because he's really into cars and motorbikes and going to the pub with his mates on a Saturday night. And one of the guys on the show, Tim Watson, who has raised sons of his own, and most people would not know this, but he has a son who is a great footballer who took a year off and went and lived in New York and worked as a barista when there was a whole lot of stuff going on with his sporting club. But when he came back, his son, who was this football captain and, you know, big guy about town, when he gave his press conference, he wore a cap with the words feminist on it. And I really fell in love with him because he was a guy who'd obviously learned about his circle of control and circle of influence, because something had happened in his life that had taken him away from football for a year, and he'd taken himself off to New York, worked as a barista and started to hang out with completely different people. And you could see it had had this amazing effect on his life of balance. You know, he was no longer this football star in a small, you know, I guess Melbourne is relatively in the world, a small town.
He'd been an expat, Kirsty.
He had been an expat. Thank you. But anyway, so Tim Watson, sort of knowing that he's the father of this person and is obviously very well adjusted himself, he raised the question of, you know, well, what is now today in today's society a man's man? Like, is it the same as what, you know, when we were growing up, we would call a man's man? Anyway, they had all these blokes ringing in. Now, to give you an idea of their audience, I think next week they're having something called the Tradies Ball, where all the plumbers are going to get together and have a ball, and they were trying to work out, you know, on a building site, who's the top of the rung? Is it the build? Is it the, you know, the carpenter, the electrician, the plumber, the whatever? These are the conversations they have. This is why I'm telling you I am not... definitely not their target market. But one of the answers when they were saying what a man's man is one guy said, a man's man stands in the Bunnings snag line, as in the sausages. And for anyone who's not from Australia, I'm going to have to explain this. Bunnings is a homeware shop, and it's a hardware shop, I should say. It's not a homeware. It's a hardware store that is man heaven. And on Saturdays, they always have sausage sizzles, like, to support different organisations. So the guy rang in and said, a man's man is someone who's standing in the snag line at Bunnings on a Saturday morning cleaning the earwax with his car key. Cleaning the earwax out of his ear with his car keys. I was in hysterics, but Tim Watson was laughing even harder because he was saying he had an uncle that used to do that at the dinner table after dinner. Oh, I don't know. I think I find these guys complete escapism, you know, from my world.
From your everyday.
And
yes.
And I wonder if it's, you know, I grew up in a country town on a street where my whole family took up that block, and I had seven uncles who were all truck drivers and all got together and had really fun conversations and went fishing and yabbing and did those things. And I don't know, I feel a great amount of security and warmth listening in on those blokey conversations, do you know, like where you can just have a laugh. And it doesn't have to be too serious or too political or whatever. To me, it is great escapism. I get a good giggle. So, yeah, that's why. So I guess that takes up an hour and a half of my listening every day.
Goodness. Yeah, well, you don't have a lot of time with your work and your children and your house management.
All right, so TV for me, though. Did you see, Nikki, that House of Cards is back on Netflix?
I did see, yes.
And so I very cheekily went to watch episode one when I was in Australia, which, of course, my husband wasn't. So I thought, oh, I'll just have a look at the first episode. And I couldn't do any more because it was so good. I thought, I have to wait for Greg. You know, this is just too good. Have you watched it yet?
I haven't, no. Right. No, I actually didn't watch the last season, so I need to get up today.
Yeah, and I can understand why you didn't. It lagged somewhere last year, didn't it? You know, it kind of lost a few people, I think. But it's got a whole new look to it this time. It's almost kind of terrifying. And they've done very well in the...
Great.
No, but terrifying in dark, you know, even though they're in the White House and in the Capitol. Remember the first season of House of Cards? It was all very beautiful. Like, her clothes beautiful.
The house
was beautiful. Everything was very beautiful. And it's almost like it's got darker and harsher and, you know, there's a different filter that they're using. Kevin Spacey is aging just like our presidents do tend to age drastically.
Yes.
And, yeah, just the colour of the screen, everything. So I think it's definitely worth going back and having a look at. I don't want to ruin anything, but there's a real focus on terror and how he is manipulating America with his talk on terror. Mm. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What have you been watching on TV?
Oh, well, I do a few different things, but I went back to Unreal season 2.
Is that the one that's Unreal? Like The Bachelor?
Yes, the behind the scenes of The Bachelor.
Yes, yeah. It's like a doco of...
Yeah, it's done like a doco, but it's totally all fictional. But
yes.
Yeah, it's a girl who is a producer and she has some mental health issues that she sometimes doesn't address and that makes it all go a bit more crazier.
Yes.
But I realised when I watched it, and I watched a few episodes and then I was like, just so awful. Like, these people are so awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think in the first season I was prepared to put that aside because I just wanted to see how it went.
Yes.
But I actually ended up putting it aside because I was like, these people are just so awful and I can't see how there's going to be anything good out of it. I mean, I think it's clever and I like it, but I've decided that I'm old enough now that I can make the decision not to watch the whole series.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm exactly the same. I watched the first season and did think they were pretty awful all the way through and then was interested with the second season to see how they were going to make a second season.
Yeah.
You know, because of how the first one ended. And,
yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was thinking, you know, I know that the people that make The Bachelor are probably really looking for terrible things to happen and whatever, but I don't know if they could possibly be that awful and still
escape. Yeah, I just and they're just really awful, horrible people. So whatever, I just let it go.
Yeah,
I'm quite proud of myself. I'm not very good at walking away from things. My FOMO makes me keep going for some reason.
Okay, so social media for me, oh, how gorgeous was James Corden's last car karaoke with Ed Sheeran. Have you
seen
it?
Best ever. Oh, best ever.
It was really, really good. And I just, the honesty of Ed Sheeran and is just fantastic. But that whole thing about how he no longer has a phone and only does email, and I'm trying to work out how the logistic, it must be because he has people.
He has an assistant, exactly.
Yeah. He couldn't do that without people. But, yeah, in there, there's a scene where he puts the 55 Maltesers in his mouth.
Yeah.
Have you seen now there's been a whole string of Instagram and YouTube and whatever of people putting the Maltesers in their mouth?
No, I haven't seen
that. There has. And I actually saw a news thing the other day out of the UK where there's a salmonella warning for a factory that's in with Maltesers. So, yeah, probably not a wise thing to do right now. What about you with social media? What have you been watching?
No, I defer to you on social media. I haven't been doing a lot there.
Okay, so there was one other thing that picked up in my social media feed, if that's the case, I'd love to share. And that was a video piece from The Atlantic, and it was a journalist called Daniel Lombroso went inside the Church Militant for The Atlantic. Church Militant are a group of radical Catholics who run a news organisation who claimed to be saving Americans from sin. And I wanted to attach it today because I think, you know, there's so much talk about extremists that I think it's good sometimes to be reminded that extremists come from all sides of religions. This guy who runs it's called Michael Voris, and one of his phrases he says, in all of the great debates we've had in America, we've never sat down and had the debate over which religion is the right religion. And it just blew me away because that's so far away from what America, you know, from what I was led to believe stands for. You know, they don't stand for any right religion. Yeah, and it's just a really interesting look. These guys are booming. So they started their own little news organization. You know, there was maybe two of them, and then there was four of them, and then there was eight of them, and now they're getting millions of shares, and they very right-wing conservative Catholics. And of course, when you delve a little bit deeper, you find out that the gentleman who's running this, Michael Voris, used to be homosexual, but of course he's not now. Yes, because he's been saved from sin. Yeah, what is it, Nikki, with these people?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's very hard. I saw yesterday there was a series of marches in the US, marches against Sharia, because obviously Sharia laws any day are going to be implemented any day now in the US. So there was a group of cities that organized marches against Sharia. And so they let sort of individual organizers do it. This group called Act for America organized them. And one of the marches in Arkansas was, the organizer was interviewed on a podcast this week. And he said, you know, we want Muslims to know they're not welcome in our cities. They're not welcome in our state. You know, ultimately they're not welcome in our country. And eventually, obviously not on the planet Earth. So that went a little bit viral. Oh. And as you can imagine. And then the march in Arkansas was actually canceled. But I don't understand it. I mean, extremes on both sides, politics, religion, anything. It's just, I can't. I'm much more centrist on everything. So I don't really understand that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
The last thing I was going to say about reading of what I've been reading this week was, it's a post from August 2016. So it's not new, but there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal about what teens need most from their parents. And seeing my youngest has just turned 11. So I now have 11, 13, 14, 17. It was, you know, interesting reading for me. But one thing that I thought was so true, and yeah, you know, I'll be honest, I don't read a lot of parenting self-help books. In fact, I've never read one.
I read What to Expect When You're Expecting.
I guess if you class those, I read Up
I'm
the
just
Duff.
Classing that. Yeah. And Up the Duff. Kaz took Up the Duff.
Yeah. I definitely read Up the Duff. But I haven't read Along the Way. Do you know, I haven't read what my kids are meant to do at what age or what I should be looking for. But I thought this article was really, really on point because it, you know, I could identify with a lot of what it was saying about teens. And it, just one thing they said about age 11 and 12, parts of the brain responsible for prospective memory or remembering what you were supposed to do in the future are still maturing. And they were saying about the fear of that. And I had received an email from my child that day saying, Mum, I'm really scared I'm going to forget to ask you for the money for the Step Up t-shirt. So I'm sending you an email asking if you can just remind me tonight because I'm really scared I'm not going to get a t-shirt because I'm going to forget to ask you.
Aww.
And I was thinking, you know, we forget the fear of our little people, of just the day-to-day. See, I was thinking, imagine living like that, your poor little thing, that you don't trust your brain, because he shouldn't, because he is terrible.
I don't trust my brain. I'm much older than him.
Well, the thing is, with that child, our guys have a cashless society at school. You put cash on these special cards that they use. So, of course, he was given the cash to go and put on the card that morning, and I handed it to him at the door while he had his backpack on and then found the money by the water dispenser, you know, 2 hours later, because just before he'd gone to walk out the door, he'd gone to fill his water bottle up. Anyway, one of the things that really peeved me in this article, though, was the quote of a 2014 study of 188 children compared the effects of mothers who were warm, affectionate and approving during disagreements versus mothers who became angry and argumentative. Teens at age 16 who have affectionate mums when they were 12 showed brain changes linked to lower rates of sadness and anxiety and greater self-control. according to the study led by the researchers of the University of Melbourne in Australia.
Fake news. Fake news.
Yes. Excuse me, University of Melbourne in Australia. Where were the dads? Do these teens not have dads? Why are we focusing on mothers who become angry and aren't? Oh, I just felt it infuriated me. I became a very angry mother when I read this. Why did they do this to us?
Because they, I don't know why, and they'll be the same people saying, you know, mothers have, you know, doubts, and they'll be doing studies on that. Where are the studies on fathers and their doubts about their parenting skills? Exactly. I don't think there are any.
Oh, okay. Now, Nikki, you said we had a message on SpeakPipe. I'm going to go find it.
We do. www.truefatexpat.com website, where you can click on the link and leave us a voice message. Judith in Dubai has left us a message, so let's listen to that one.
Okay.
Hi, Kirsty and Nikki. It's Judith here in Dubai. I am catching up on the older podcast because I'm a little bit behind in listening and I've just listened to Study Buddies. I'm so excited that you interviewed another audiologist. I'm an audiologist, an Australian audiologist, living in Dubai. I can't work because I can't get my license because of my qualifications. So I'm upgrading to a master's from a UK university, trying to work on my dissertation, having to go to Fiji soon to collect my data. It was just so exciting to hear another audiologist, expert audiologist who's studying, being interviewed. Thanks so much for the podcast and thank you for the motivation to keep going. Bye.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
I know, isn't it so lovely? That Study Buddies episode's really like rippling out.
Yes. Oh, that's brilliant. That was a great episode, the Study Buddies, for what people were studying and what they'd gone on to do. Yeah. No, that's really cool. Hi, Judith in Dubai. Thank you for coming back and catching up on all your episodes. Hopefully it's not 2019 by the time you hear this and we're not completely irrelevant.
Now, there was a great review this week. It wasn't from iTunes, but we would encourage anyone who wants to leave us an iTunes review. I found it on Twitter and it was from a blog post about the 11 top podcasts to listen to. Her name is Gisela Urban Ward, and according to her Twitter profile, she's a writer, a lead parent, an aid worker, and she's tinkering with a blog about living in Australia and Asia, and a wannabe MG/YA novelist. Now, I confess to Googling MG. I knew what YA was, but I did do MG.
What is MG?
So middle grades. So middle grades is different to young adult, apparently. It's a different age range.
Yeah.
So it goes from 10 to, now. So there you go. She had 11 recommendations of podcasts to listen to, and one of them was ours. And she said, this podcast is a niche broadcasting gold. This podcast is why the medium was invented. As long-term expats, Kirsty Rice and Nikki Moffat know what they're talking about. They talk to women all over the world who are living a shared experience in vastly different contexts. They make me laugh and they make me reflect. And I freaking love that, because I think that that's women all over the world who are living a shared experience in vastly different contexts. I like that.
Yes. Yeah. No, I do. And that's why we made the podcast, right? Like the whole idea of this podcast was there has to be other women like us out there, and other men if you're there as well, but we know there's not as many men as women. But yeah, that's exactly why we're here. And yeah, I agree with you. I freaking love it as well, because it's just because, you know, quite often, Nikki, you and I sit here, we talk to each other, you go edit a bit, send it to me, I edit a bit, we put it out to the ether, and then we just go, oh well, it says that there's thousands of people listening, but you know, who knows? Maybe iTunes got that bit wrong. So, yes, it is really, really nice. I think that's why you probably hear most podcasts, people begging for iTunes reviews and whatever. It's not only that it does boost you in the ratings, but it's also so good to get feedback. So, yeah, if you don't want to do the iTunes thing, please, like Nikki said, do the SpeakPipe thing, which is there's a little microphone on both the Two Fat Expats site and the Four Kids 20 Suitcases site. There's a little microphone where you can just push it and say, hi, guys, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm doing, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. Make an episode about this, please, or don't make an episode about this again.
We're sick of those episodes.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's it. But Kirsty, we have been talking for a very long time today.
Okay. time
to
go. There's
going to have to be some editing.
Oh, dear. I hope maybe people will let us do a long time stay because we were sort of late from last week. So maybe we'll
I think they will. I think they will. But okay. I know how you feel about long time.
No, I'm going to blow the rules today. We can have a long one. That's cool. Because I also think I love it when the episodes are more of listening to other expats, and I think that's what this one's been. We've given other people's feedback and their comments, so yeah, that's great.
Okay, well, good luck in Qatar, and let's hope the internet stays up.
Yes, let's see what the week holds.
Speak to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.